right, we are back. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you're not familiar with our shows, you can head over to our homepage, kuci.org, or check out our socials, KUCI FM. You'll find out all great details about this station. We have an eclectic mix of public affairs shows, music shows, amazing talent here, right from the university, all these students that are here giving you unique programming not offered anywhere else, and also the public affairs shows. So it's a great mix. Again, kuci.org. All right, standing by is author Ruth Franklin. She's an award-winning author, and she has a new book out called The Many Lives of Anne Frank. And she's standing by. I'll bring her on in just a moment. Yale University Press and Jewish Lives is pleased to announce that this paperback publication of this acclaimed book, The Many Lives of Anne Frank, is out now by Ruth Franklin. It's an innovative biography, and Franklin is exploring the transformation of Anne Frank from ordinary teenager to icon. She sheds new light on the young woman whose diary of her years in hiding, now translated into more than 70 languages, is the most widely read work of literature to arise from the Holocaust. Ruth is joining us now. Good morning, Ruth.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me here.
This is an extraordinary book. And I want to take a step back before we dive in and just ask, what made you want to revisit Anne Frank's story?
Well, you know, like so many of us, I grew up reading Anne Frank's diary, and she just was always kind of in the back of my mind as one of those touchstone figures who was so important to me. But at the same time, as I started hearing more and more about missing pages from her diary coming to the surface, and finding out especially that there were multiple versions of her diary in existence, that she had actually intent to publish it, was what really made me want to dive into the backstory of what was motivating her and how exactly she did that.
It's really an incredible read. What would you say that people, you know, they feel like they already know this story, but when you were starting to unpack this, what were some of your, you know, key findings and aha moments?
Well, you know, Anne Frank's story is so familiar to us, you know, just like her face. It's become so iconic. We all know that, you know, that she was in hiding in Amsterdam during World War II until, of course, her hiding place was raided by the Nazis and everybody was deported and taken off to the camps. You know, what surprised me the most, you know, it wasn't like I had some big aha moment, like, oh, I discovered Anne Frank isn't really who we think she is or something like that.
Right.
It was really more in the small details, you know, all the little facts about how the Holocaust in the Netherlands unfolded, which was very specific to its time and place. Little things like, you know, how the Jewish teachers established a high school for Jewish students on the spur of the moment, after all the Jewish students were kicked out of the regular public schools and they had to create this special school for the Jewish students. Some of the stories that came out of there are just absolutely heartrending. And, you know, I have been studying the Holocaust, reading about it ever since I was a child, studying it for a lot of my career. And still, you know, just about every day I would find out something I didn't know, you know, about the circumstances in a camp or, you know, just some, there's just so much history there.
Mm-hmm. Now, Anne was born in 1929?
That's right, in Frankfurt, Germany.
Okay, and in 1933, the family, they fled to the Netherlands to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, after Hitler came to power in Germany.
All right, and then the Netherlands was occupied by Germany in 1940, and then tell us a little more, because for people that might not even know about the secret annex.
That's right. So the family, Anne's family were German Jews. Her father's family actually had been in Frankfurt for generations. They felt very German. They felt very stable there, a part of the culture. Otto Frank, Anne's father, even served in the German army during World War I. And then, you know, when Hitler came to power, they lost all of that sense of security. And they decided on the Netherlands as their refuge. Of course, you know, as we would all find out, this wasn't a safe choice for them. Other Jews in their situation emigrated to what was then Palestine before the war. Mm-hmm. Others managed to make it to America, including two of Anne's uncles, actually brothers of her mother, who tried desperately to get the family to join them in America and weren't successful. So after the Nazis occupied the Netherlands in May 1940, and it became clear in the summer of 1942, after Anne's older sister, Margot, received a call-up notice telling her that she had to report for what was called labor work in Germany, but which we now know was deportation to Auschwitz. Margot got one of these notices that she had to report in fact, the first wave of mass deportations of Jews from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And the family went into hiding the very next day in the space that Otto Frank had created, sort of in the back part of the building where his office was located. He had the foresight to establish this hiding place in an unused part of the building. And he managed to get his employees, with whom he was very close friends, to agree to support and sustain his family and their coworkers, the Van Pels family, while they were in hiding. Of course, they didn't know at that point that it was going to be more than 2 years.
Okay.
But they owe their having survived that long to the support of their wonderful friends and neighbors.
Mm. It's quite the story. I mean, at what age did you start reading about Anne Frank?
Well, I grew up in a family of survivors. My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. My mother was actually born in a displaced persons camp in Germany before they all emigrated to the U.S. So it was part of sort of, the texture of my childhood from very early on. And I actually visited the Anne Frank house on a family vacation when I was around 8 years old. And when I started working on this book, it was during the COVID period, and I couldn't travel to the Netherlands to research it. So I was relying, during that time, I was relying on my own memories of having visited there as a child. And, even then, I remember thinking how small it was. Those who haven't visited, you can't really picture. This was no spacious apartment.
No.
There were very, very cramped quarters for these eight people to be living together, in under very, very strange circumstances where they were, they had to remain silent for much of the day. They were constantly under great stress, of course, of being discovered. And Anne describes this all so with such vividness in her diary. It's really a fantastic study of human psychology under stress.
At the age of 15.
That's right. Well, of course, she started her diary even younger,
sure,
when she was 13.
13, yeah.
But the version of it that we know, which is the version that she rewrote entirely with the hope that it would someday find an audience, mm-hmm, is her mature 15-year-old voice, this writer's voice that she had been practicing and honing during all that time in hiding.
And so tell us who found the diary.
So when the annex was raided by the Gestapo, the officer who arrested the residents took the briefcase that Anne had been using to keep her diary and dumped everything in it on the floor. He wanted to use it to carry away the small valuables that they had. Mm-hmm. And after the raid, there are two women, Miet Ries and Bep Voskal, who were both employees of Otto Frank and were part of this group of friends who kept them alive while they were in hiding. Miet and Bep went up to the annex to see if there's anything to be salvaged. And what they found was Anne's diary scattered all over the floor. And they picked up as much of it as they could. It was, not only the famous red checked notebook that we might have an image of in our minds, but also more notebooks in which Anne had continued to write, and also all these loose pages that she was using for her rewrite. Everything was scattered all over the floor. They gathered up as much as they could and kept it with the hope that she would return, of course. And then when it became clear that she and her sister had both been murdered in Bergen-Belsen, Neep took all the pages and gave them to Otto and said, "This is your daughter's legacy to you."
Wow. Yeah.
I know. It's so extraordinary to, you know, to try to put yourself in the position of Otto Frank, who was the only survivor of the eight people who were in hiding in the annex. He was imprisoned in Auschwitz. He survived being in Auschwitz. He made this long, torturous journey back to Amsterdam, where he waited for news of his daughters. He already knew at that point that his wife had been killed in Auschwitz. But he waited with the hope that his daughters would return. And, you know, the idea, you know, it's one thing, I think, so many of us read Em's diary as children or as teenagers, you know, close to the age that she was when she was writing it. But to read it as an adult, and especially with the perspective of a parent, is such a different experience. And, you know, I have to say that I really felt in awe of Otto Frank, the way that he seems to have immediately recognized that his daughter's diary, you know, wasn't just a valuable, you know, cherished memento of who she was, but also this document that would have the power to change the world.
Yes, tremendously. And so she was, someone betrayed the family, correct? And they were found.
Yes. Well, you know, we don't know for sure. Even still, after all these years, there have been, you know, investigations have been done at different points. There's an investigation immediately after the war that Otto Frank called for, and again, I think, again in the 60s, and then more recently, one that your listeners might have heard of, there's an episode on 60 Minutes about a new investigation using AI to put together data about you know, people who might have been the betrayer, to try to come up with a new theory. But unfortunately, the theory that that team came up with has been disproved by a group of Dutch historians, and the book that was based on it has actually been withdrawn from publication in the Netherlands and in Germany. And you know, my own take on it is that we won't ever know who betrayed the residents of the annex. Right. There's so many different theories. The researchers at the Anne Frank House actually think that there might not have been a betrayer at all, and that the residents might have been discovered by accident. The Nazis were actually looking for stolen goods, and in fact, they found hiding Jews. And I think, you know, in the end, it's kind of a distraction to point a finger at a particular person when we all know that it's the Nazis who are responsible for the death of Anne Frank.
Yes. I have to share a little side note with you. So there was a family cousin I met. His name was Peter Konstam. And my grandmother's name was Konstam. They were German Jews. And Peter was born in Amsterdam, 1936. His parents, Hans and Ruth Konstam, were forced to flee from Nuremberg. And they went to Amsterdam, and it was by chance that the Konstam's apartment in Amsterdam was downstairs from the family of Anne Frank. And
and she was his babysitter, right?
That's right.
So amazing. And he was your cousin. Wow.
Well, a very distant cousin. Very distant cousin.
So you're 2 degrees removed from Anne Frank.
And so the book was called A Chance to Live, A Family's Journey to Freedom. By Peter Konstam.
Yes, I know it. I actually had the opportunity to meet Peter Konstam.
Come on.
At one point while
really?
I was researching this book. Yeah, and what a great story he tells, too, of his family's escape.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's unbelievable that you know who he is. That's wonderful. Yeah, I had a chance to meet him. He was on my show. He called into my show to talk about the book a while ago.
Nice.
So what else would you like listeners to know about the book?
You know, one thing, when you asked about the surprises of my research, one thing that I want to mention is that people often don't expect is that when we think about the Holocaust experience, we are often thinking about it from the perspective of a man, because so many of the best known survivor memoirs are by men. And I mean, you know, Elie Wiesel's Night and Primo Levi's Survival in Auschwitz. And of course, you know, the Nazis persecuted Jews as Jews, first of all. Mm-hmm. But one thing I discovered during my research, the research that I did to try to piece together what happened to Anne after the annex, when she was in first the Dutch transit camp, Westerbork, and then Auschwitz, and finally Bergen-Belsen. And I read a number of memoirs of survivors of those camps by people who were imprisoned there at the same time that she and her sister would have been. And I focused on reading memoirs by women because it became clear to me pretty early on that women's experience in those camps was just a little bit different from men's. You know, not only were they imprisoned in different parts of the camp under slightly different circumstances, but they were treated differently. And of course, you know, there was always a level, you know, a risk of sexual violence against them by the Nazis that men didn't face. But they also formed very, very close social bonds. And that's something that actually, you know, that it's quite dark, you know, to spend a lot of time researching a book like this.
Sure.
But that's something I think that, you know, that we can point to that offers some element of uplift, that these women, you know, these women stuck together, not just Anne and her sister and their mother, you know, whom they were, you know, at war with in the annex. So much tension between these teenage girls and their mother. But of course, once they're in prison together, that all melts away, and they're a family unit, fighting for survival, mm-hmm. and also sticking together with other women, you know, other pairs of sisters and mothers, and women and girls looking out for each other. And I found that aspect of the story really moving, and
yes.
and one that I wish more people were aware of.
Yeah, I almost feel like it could be a movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know. Tell me about your process of writing this book. It's, you know, it's a long book. And how did you know when you were satisfied that it was done?
You know, when I first started writing it, the idea popped into my mind that I wanted to write alongside Anne rather than over her.
Mm-hmm.
That line just came to me, and I didn't even really know what I meant by it.
Interesting.
But it came to my mind as a principle that I was going to need to follow writing this, because of course Anne has already told her own story. She doesn't need me to tell her story for her. But what the reader does need, and what I tried to provide, was this kind of panoramic or kaleidoscopic look at Anne Frank. And that's why the book is called The Many Lives of Anne Frank. I look at her in terms of, you know, different perspectives on her life, different identities that she had at different points. And I wanted it to be sort of like she was standing in the middle of a circle and we're walking all around her, looking at her from different perspectives, you know, from mm-hmm. the time that she's a child in Frankfurt to her years as a refugee in the Netherlands and in the camps. And then ultimately, you know, the second half of the book is a cultural history of the idea of Anne Frank as it's changed and developed over all the years since her diary first made such a huge impact on the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I knew from the beginning that I wanted to tell both parts of those of her story, you know, her life as well as her afterlife. And that the parts, you know, that they could be linked, that one could move back and forth between one and the other.
Yeah. And how is your book tour going?
Oh, it's been really meaningful to meet people in lots of different places. So many people have a story about their first encounter with the diary or, you know, something particularly meaningful that came out of it for them. You know, my previous biography is about Shirley Jackson, and so I'm used to people telling me their stories of, you know, the first time that they read The Lottery and what an impact it had on them. But, you know, it's really meaningful. I started collecting, while I was doing my research, I started collecting stories of people whose encounter with the diary had changed their lives.
Oh, that's great.
You know, from people who are inspired to make art about it to, you know, translating it or just other ways. And I intersperse some of those stories as little short profiles of these people in the book. And while I've been, you know, now that it's out in the world, now it's in paperback, I've had the privilege to encounter so many more people who have fascinating stories about what it was like for them to read the diary and how it affected them.
Yeah, and new perspective, and you know, here we are in 2026, and very, you know, it's very timely, sadly, because there's so much anti-Semitism.
Absolutely, and I have to say, I was never expecting that.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, it shows us how meaningful Anne's story is in all kinds of different contexts. You know, and from the very beginning, that was how her father wanted it to be received, as you know, both as a story about the persecution of Jews, but also a story about persecution of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
He really wanted that book to go out in the world and be read by as many people as possible, so that it could work against prejudice and hatred. And you know, obviously, it's got a lot more work to do.
Sure.
But you know, imagine what the world would look like without Anne Frank's diary in it.
I can't even. Yeah. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, I invite people to look at my Substack, which is at ruthfranklin.substack.com. I've got a lot of information there about the backstory of writing this book, as well as a few things about what I'm up to now.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook and Instagram.
And what are you up to now?
I'm working on a new project about Mark Twain's legacy in America today.
That's fantastic. I love that.
Thank you.
And do you teach any writing workshops?
Yes, I teach writing at Columbia University, but I also teach privately online through my speaking agency, which is the Shipman Agency.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's interested in taking a one-off class on writing biography or writing criticism or the other things I teach, I encourage you to look at my social media and sign up.
Okay, and it is just your name for social media?
Yes.
Perfect.
That's right.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ruth, for calling in and, you know, sharing this story with us. How long did it take you to write this book, by the way?
It took about 5 years.
I believe it. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate your interest in my book.
My pleasure. Be well. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Ruth Franklin talking about her book, The Many Lives of Anne Frank. It's an incredible read, and you can learn more about it by visiting my show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. If you missed any part of my conversation with Ruth, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. Again, the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. If you're not familiar with KUCI, head over to our website at kuci.org and check out our socials at KUCI-FM. That is a wrap for me. I'm Janine. You've been listening to Get the Funk Out right here on KUCI 88.9 FM. Up next, SoCal New Waver with Pass Forward. Stick around for that. That's a fantastic show. And I will be back next week. Again, you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I just want to leave you with, if you are interested in pitching me a guest, I am accepting pitches for the next month or so. You can send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at KUCI.org. Have a great week, everyone, and I'll be back next week. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.